Welcome to the Following Films podcast. I'm your host, Chris Maynard. Today we have a special episode featuring Stefan Peterson and Sonia Ballantyne, co-directors of The Death Tour. The Death Tour is a road trip movie like none other, which takes viewers on an epic journey to a part of the world rarely captured on camera. Executive produced by wrestling legend Chris Jericho, audiences experience these remote communities through the wrestlers' eyes as they drive through the frozen tundra, sleep on ring mats after shows, and face their inner demons. Some hope that surviving the Death Tour will propel them to wrestling superstardom, while others, their bodies battered and scarred, head north for one last chance to hear the roar of an adoring crowd. Before we begin our conversation with Stefan and Sonia, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Bookmans. As an independent bookstore, they believe in the magic of storytelling and the cinematic arts. If you're looking to expand your collection of films, music, or books, visit your nearest Bookmans and discover something truly wonderful. And if you haven't already, please follow the Following Films podcast on Spotify to show your support. This will help us to continue to bring you in-depth conversations with the talented individuals who shape the world of cinema. The Death Tour premieres at Slam Dance on January 19th. Hope you enjoy the show. Thanks. Hey, Sonia. Hey, Stefan. Hello. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Pleasure's ours.
Well, okay. So I got to be perfectly honest. I think a lot of people probably approach this in the same way that I did, where I don't know anything about wrestling. I don't really care for wrestling. Don't give a shit about wrestling at all. Doesn't mean anything to me. Fortunately, Annie told me to stop being a jerk and watch this movie because she knew I'd love it. And so I took her up and I realized that this isn't, while it takes place in the world of wrestling, this is by no means a movie about wrestling. I think that this is really a deeply human story about people who are trying to find themselves and this community at large that I learned so much about through this film, who are looking for moments of joy in a, you know, in a very difficult circumstance. So congratulations on the film. I think you did something really wonderful here. But I just wanted to preface that before the first question, which is how did you become aware of this story? Because I had never heard of this before. And that's for both of you. So
go ahead, Steph.
Chris, I was not a wrestling fan either, man. You know, like you, bit of a snob perhaps, you know, I mean, you pooh-poohed it perhaps, you know, as a kid played on trampolines and, you know, was like, you know, suplexing my neighbors, but came across it by fluke while on another project up in northern Manitoba and, just kind of came across it by fluke. You know, we were in this small town, took us 4 days to get there over frozen lakes. You know, we had to pack our own food. We were sleeping in our truck. We were not expecting the traveling circus to come through town. And sure enough, one night I'm like, rolling out my sleeping bag in the back of our SUV. And then like this, like swarm of kids come past the car and head over to the small town, local community center. So we like take a look, what's going on. And like wrestling is in town. So, you know, bought a ticket, watched the show, and couldn't believe my eyes. I mean, you know, the gym was packed. There was Huskies breaking in to escape the blizzard outside. Kids were throwing crushed pop cans and nickels at these grown adults who were like older than me and of all ages in spandex, like, you know, breaking their necks off the top rope there to put on a show for these kids. So obviously I was intrigued, and the next morning found out that this was not like just a one-stop situation. There was a two-week journey, and they were doing this every night. I couldn't imagine that. And once I got home, I did the research and quickly figured out that this was actually a pillar of Canadian wrestling, you know, indie wrestling. It's been going on for 50 years and it shaped the careers of many greats. So, you know, it was pretty clearly a great story at that point for me. And so I, started, you know, for the next couple of years, just, you know, did what I could to try to get out there on the tour, learn about the business, and spoke to, you know, 50 wrestlers who had either done it or were hoping to do it. And really, they all kind of, like, all of their stories were really inspiring. You know, they'd all, this was their passion, and, you know, it had helped them in one way or another, which was kind of, I found kind of unique how, like, wrestling seemed to help, you know, find people seem to find wrestling at this like time and at this crossroads in their lives. And but like their dedication to the craft and their passion was what was really inspiring. You know, they were all like, they would drop everything anytime the phone rang for a match, you know. And if it meant, you know, like not chasing a safe career or a conventional 9-to-5 career, but just, you know, doing what they had to do to make ends meet so that when the phone rang, they could drop everything and go put on a show for 20 people at the Legion, you know, three towns over. It was, yeah. So that's how I got into it.
How about you, Sonia? How did you become aware of this?
I was always a wrestling fan ever since I was a little girl. I wanted to be Bret Hart or marry into his family because I just wanted to have my last name be Hart. I had encountered the Death Tour when I was a kid, when I met Tony Candelo and Adam Copeland, who wrestled in WWE as Edge. And it was just really fascinating to me how accessible wrestling was. Like, I could be a wrestler. And it was my intention to become one until I was like about 13 and really examining my adulthood and where I wanted to go, and realized that there was a very real glass ceiling for female wrestlers, and that I wasn't able to be Bret Hart just because there was no Bret Hart that was a woman yet. And so when I came onto this project, I knew that I wanted to tell like a part of the story that didn't really get told a lot, because like in wrestling circles, this tour is well known about in most circles. But people often talk about the jokes that are pulled on it, or like how Jericho was on it, or how Kenny Omega fell through the ice and stuff like that. Like nobody had ever placed the tour in the context of the communities it goes to. Cause like people are always like, oh yeah, it's a 50-year tour, but they don't know how a 50-year tour continues to go on like this. And so it was really fascinating to see like how much wrestling meant to the communities when we went up there.
Well, and I think that's really the magic trick of this film that makes it work, as gives it the power that it has. Because I was anticipating more of a process film. This was going to be about exactly what you were saying. What does it take to put this on, to go through this tour, to, you know, the grueling 2 weeks and these horror stories and that? And you have elements of that here, of course. There is that part of it where I think that for somebody like me who knows nothing about it, I think that that's pretty fascinating just even to hear that part of it. But then the human story and seeing these kids, when the way they react to this, if you don't well up when they're all grabbing on to these wrestlers, I don't think you have a heart. I can't imagine not being moved by this. And I was always a music guy growing up. I loved live music and I loved theater and I loved film. And so these were communal events. And now I get wrestling. Like, I get that. I thought of it as a BS sport. And it's theater sport. This is a live performance. That's what this is. And I totally get that now in a different context than I ever did before. So I live very close to Mexico. I live like 60 miles north of Mexico. And there's a whole tradition of wrestling here as well that does make it up to my area sometimes. And I really want to go see it now. So you've you've had that impact on me for sure. But could you talk a little bit about that thing that you were talking about there, Sonia, with centering this on the community? And when did that come into this story? Today's episode of the Following Films podcast is brought to you by Bookmans. Do you have books, movies, or music gathering dust on your shelves? Give them a new life at Bookmans. They gladly accept trade-ins and buy used media. Clear up some space for new artistic journeys while knowing that your books, movies, and music will find a loving home. On my latest trip to Bookmans, I found a copy of the 1946 film, Beauty and the Beast. This film is an absolute classic and a cinematic treasure that has stood the test of time, captivating audiences for generations now. This film is extraordinary. It weaves a spellbinding tale that touches the heart and ignites your imagination. From the very first frame, the exquisite artistry and attention to detail transport you to a mesmerizing realm of fantasy and wonder. Cocteau's visionary direction infuses each scene with poetic elegance, and it allows the story to unfold in a visually stunning and emotionally resonant manner. One cannot help but be captivated by the production design and breathtaking cinematography. The opulent castle, with its haunting corridors and magical rooms, becomes a character in itself And this isn't like when people say New York is a character in the film. This is a literal character in the film. The ethereal lighting and intricate set pieces create a visual feast that immerses the audience in a realm of enchantment. What truly sets this rendition of Beauty and the Beast apart is its ability to delve beyond the surface and explore the complexities of human nature. The film delves into themes of love, sacrifice, and the transformative power of acceptance. It reminds us that true beauty lies within, and that appearances can be deceiving. The allegorical elements presented throughout the story add depth and thought-provoking layers, making it a timeless tale with universal resonance. Beauty and the Beast, it's nothing short of a triumph when it comes to storytelling and craftsmanship, a true cinematic gem that continues to captivate audiences even after decades. There's very few things you can see that were made 80 plus years ago, or almost 80 years now, I guess, if I'm doing my math correctly, that still hold up. That stands as a testament to the power and imagination and the enduring appeal of a tale as old as time. If you seek a film that transports you to a world of magic, look no further than this timeless masterpiece. I cannot recommend the film highly enough, and recommend that you go to your local Bookman's to unearth your new favorite film. Remember, Bookman's has your cool covered. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Well, I hope like Steph doesn't mind if I talk about that briefly. Steph came to me because he saw that there was a part of the story that he couldn't tell or didn't feel, I don't want to speak or put into his words, so I hope I get this right, but like he didn't feel comfortable telling the indigenous part of the story without somebody who was indigenous. And I really appreciated that when he approached me about it, because I knew I didn't want to, I have seen wrestling documentaries and a lot of them follow the same format, follow the same tropes, follow the same stories. And I was like, I want to make it completely like, I don't want to make a capital W wrestling documentary. I want to make a capital F film like out of this. Yeah. And I want to take it seriously. And I want to do everything about like to make sure that it focuses on like why these people go to these specific communities. Why is it still popular up there? And why do people keep still doing it? Like, why do these wrestlers like clamor for spots with Tony to come on these tours? And so like it was something I was really touched by, because like I think that's where the best partnerships with me and Steph came out of, just because the honesty was always there. And so that was something I wanted to bring to the film as well, like always being honest about like their intentions and honest about themselves as people, and like focusing on like why it's so difficult to be a wrestler, but also why they love it so much. And so that was something I think that was, even though I'm a huge wrestling fan, I had been looking down on it for so long before we went on the death tour. And I was like, I was poo-pooing it as we went up there, but then it really renewed my love for wrestling when we went up there. So I was just very happy to take part and like being able to focus on a part of the story that hadn't been told before. I think that's what's special about it.
So Steph, can you touch on that? Also the idea that you brought in Sonia for this, because you knew there was a bigger piece of the story that you wanted to tell, and just how that came together and how did you find her?
Yeah, well, it was a great story. I mean, so, you know, this project had been something we've been chipping away at, for maybe a year or two, just trying to get it, about 2 years, trying to get it, like, just see if there's something here. I went up and shot a sizzle reel with my colleague Joe on the tour. But then, you know, as soon as we started getting like a little broadcaster interest, and we knew that this project, like, okay, it had some legs, that's when we knew it was like, okay, well, you know, this tour, although it's, you know, the focus is the story of these, you know, most at the time, like mostly white wrestlers, you know, this tour is going through these First Nations communities. And so we're also telling their story as well. So, you know, it was pretty clear. We got to bring, you know, we need someone who can speak to who's from those communities. And then when we so we started researching and looking for directors who are from the area, we'd spoken to a few, and then we came across Sonia, who was also a wrestling fan. So right away she got top of list. And but, you know, she rejected the first email. And so while the team was like, oh, man, that sucks, it's like, no, we need Sonia. Like, she doesn't take any guff. Like, this is who we need on this on this project. So I made a follow-up call, and you know, the rest is history there. But so that's how we got Sonya. It was, you know, we knew she was you know, she wasn't taking any shit, and and knew these two worlds in a way that, you know, I didn't, obviously. So, and it's been honestly like a really wonderful collaboration. So,
well, I think there's a good piece of advice for anybody in that. If you ever want a job, just say no first. Just reject. Nah, I'm good. I don't need it. And especially in the world of film, not many people are rejecting offers. So can you talk a little bit about that? You get this initial email and you're like, oh God, no, I'm done. Well,
I think it was because I was initially worried that there is this thing in Canada where a lot of people will get Indigenous creators on just as like a checklist for funding. And got so it. I was worried that was what was happening. Not that that happened here, but like, I was just like, and I really honestly wanted to focus on writing, like TV writing. And like, and I think that was the first conversation me and Steph had, because he was like, I want to go on this tour. And I'm like, okay, first off, do you know why they call it the death tour? Like, you know, like specifically, are you aware? And he told me he had gone on it, like, and he had seen it. He knew how difficult it was. And I was like, oh, and I started to really like, well, I began to trust Steph, just because he was always so forthright and honest with me. And that is very rare in the film community, because you're as an Indigenous creative, especially as a woman, you often have your guards up and you're constantly like preparing for fights before they even happen. And you're just like expecting to have to justify choices. And it was never the case with Steph. And so I was like, every single time I've been pleasantly surprised. Like, we were going to bring on, I won't say their name, but like, we were going to bring on a wrestling historian, and I told Steph like that they would have to interview, he would have to interview them, because this person notoriously is a sexist and a little bit of a racist. And Steph just looks at me and goes, Sonya, why would we have anyone like them on the film? And I'm like, right? So it was very fun to work with him, just because like, he also helped me realize that I could break some of the rules in the wrestling history, like that, like just because people are respected doesn't mean that they deserve carte blanche to treat people terribly. And I think that's something I also learned from the wrestlers we followed this tour.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult to get anything made. And when you have questions that are, you have things that are brought up, there's doubt that's sown frequently, even if you are a white male, you know, that's that. But then you throw in this other layer where you have to question it. Is this doubt being sown because I'm a minority? Is it because I'm a woman? Or is it because it's a bad idea? Like, well, what's the root of this right here? And that's such a terrible place to be in, where you have to question that. And I'm glad that you found a good working relationship with Steph on this. Could you talk a little bit about that, of having ideas and just being open to the idea of getting them shot down, like that stuff? There's a lot of people that it's a fragile business with your ego, that it can be crushed time and time again in the film industry. Talk about being open to new ideas like that.
Well, you know, we had a great relationship, in the sense that, you know, I come with a lot of experience, or my experience is a lot in like the execution of it, of, you know, the shooting of the documentary and the putting it together and the research. And then Sonya comes with like all the in-depth knowledge of these kind of two worlds we were going into. And so it kind of like, it worked, because we had kind of like divided the work. Speaking for like the production, the actual shoot itself, which lasted, you know, essentially 2 weeks, it was really nice, because while I was able to like focus on like following a scene and physically trying to get the sound to good, you know, the images and the pictures and all that, you know, Sonya and I would then be, or Sonya and I'd be like figuring out the next story, talking to the community, talking to the wrestlers, figuring out like what are the next, you know, what are some storylines that are actively happening. I mean, it's a Verite doc that, like, you know, we're following what's happening on screen. It's, you know, the intention is always to really make it feel almost like a fiction, you know, other than a little bit of talking heads for context. But so it was really fun, because, you know, we were constantly like, you know, like splitting up and getting back together. Like, okay, what's going on here? What's the approach? What do we think? You know, what does this mean? Why is that important? And Sonya was able to just kind of like, you know, explain to me so many little wrestling ass stories and aspects and nuances that, like, oh, this is a big thing. And I mean, we could make two more films out of what didn't make the film, you know, about, you know, we could have gone more into the, you know, the inside wrestling of it. And so there, yeah. So it was a really nice, I mean, it was my first time working with the co-director, but it was perfect. So, you know,
well, I would have had, I think, a similar inclination to you, where I could have done a whole film about just them setting up their own rings and driving that long and doing that. And it's just such a hell. And I think that that would have been a mistake, because there was a much more interesting film other than this aspect of it that is pretty fascinating and pretty, when you hear the Death Tour, it's that, you know, okay, it's earning that name. I just, so people understand, like, especially people in the United States who we tend to be, unfortunately, fairly myopic, and we don't really pay attention to the rest of the world as much as we should. But Manitoba, where that you're going through, this is incredibly rural, where the pathways are only open for a few weeks a year, where you're having to drive over ice, frozen lakes, you're driving over to get through there. And I'm a desert rat. So the idea of that is frightening to me. Like, I can't believe you guys do that. I can't believe that. Can you talk a little bit about just that part of it?
Well, feeling like I am from Manitoba, like I grew up in northern central Manitoba, and on a reserve that was isolated, and it was way more isolated out there than I had ever experienced. Like, I had been to Bangladesh, where it took like 6 hours to drive 100 kilometers, and it took like, we were driving 6 hours for like to make like basically 80 kilometers. Like, it was bizarre, because I hadn't imagined that places like that still existed, never mind in Canada. And like, even though I'm Indigenous and like I had grown up in that area, it was just so bizarre to me that like we were still allowing people to have to put up with like paying $150 for water and stuff like that. And so it really opened my own mind as well, because like, I remember going up there and being like, nothing's going to shock me. I grew up like this. And so, and then having to realize that things were still very slow to evolve up there, specifically around Indigenous culture, like in Indigenous spirituality. And so it was just really eye-opening to learn that the way my reserve was in like 40 years ago is basically how some reserves are up there now. And so it was really good to meet the kids, just to have like, to know that as long as kids exist, there's always going to be people shaking the trees and like ensuring that things get like things progress.
Yeah. Thank God for people that are younger and they're not complacent, that they, you know, I've grown used to the world as much as I might hate certain aspects of it. And thank God there's kids that just won't put up with the bullshit. So we need them, but I know we're out of time, and I just got to tell you how much I really enjoyed this film, and I highly, highly recommend this to people. I think wrestling fans will have a ton that they can dive into here. And I also think that people that are like me, that never cared about wrestling, that will find if you want a documentary that's powerful, human based, I think you could do a lot worse than this one. It's a great little film. So congratulations to both of you. You got something special here.
Time enough to figure you out. Time enough to write this down. Wish me luck, give me hope.